When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Well, I think that the Bears are in a situation that calls for some action. Three straight losses in the way that they lost these games now calls for some sort of response.
There's got to be a change and adjustment to what we're doing because we, you know, obviously lost three in a row. There will be changes, adjustments being made. Again, I'm not going to disclose those right now. I'm not at that point in the process. You know, Monday's a long day.
Like, it doesn't feel like something has turned and something has gone horribly wrong to the point where it feels irretrievable this morning?
Again, I'm not going to disclose those right now. I'm not at that point in the process. You know, Monday's a long day, you know, in terms of the evaluation of everything.
If they don't respond to the coaching crisis, they don't respond to the to what's going on, then Ryan Poles ultimately is going to have to start asking hard questions about him as well.
It's a hot mess.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Now, are you going to make a change in quarterback?
No, Caleb is our starter.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Now there you have a man with certainty in his heart.
Morning, Mully. Happy Tuesday. Yeah, he's sure about his quarterback. It's ridiculous that he even had to be asked such a question at this stage of the season. Monday was a very long day. Yes, Matt Eberflus was right about that.
I don't know what to make of Matt Eberflus. I really don't know. I think, like everyone, it's just we've accepted this reality that when Sunday is bad, the post game is bad, and you know Monday's going to be bad, and then maybe by later in the week there will be enough recovery to do some of the things you prefer to have happen either in the post game on Sunday or definitely by Monday.
Yeah, it's all a kind of a muddled mess, and I think that, to me, this reveals just how inexperienced everybody at every level of their jobs is at House Hall, or that that's the appearance they're leaving, the impression they're making, because what they did yesterday was just extend a crisis longer than it needed to be extended. The lack of decisiveness is, I think, a symptomatic of what's going on with the entire season. This is, you're waiting for a decision to be made on the sidelines. Things aren't happening in as fast as they need to happen. Everything is delayed. And that was what happened yesterday. Why we are waiting for some sort of resolution to this problem. And it is a crisis. It is a problem.
Oh, it's a crisis.
I don't know why. Just, it's confounding to some degree. And it's also very revealing to because it's just a franchise that really doesn't know how to chart a course and go down a path.
I got to be honest with you. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. He was like, you know, hey, let's suppose the Bears drafted Jaden Daniels and he was here. Wouldn't he be having the same struggles that are going on that we're looking at Caleb Williams and wondering why he's struggling? Are they in a position to develop a quarterback? Have they done, if Caleb was somewhere else with different coaches, would he be doing significantly better?
I think it's a fair question. It's impossible to answer, but it's easy to say yes. And it's easy to agree with that premise. I believe that we came into the season and you felt like everything was in place and you maybe hoped as much as anything. And the evidence was there with Caleb Williams that led a lot of us to believe, not just hosts, not just media members, but talent evaluators, that he was one of those guys that transcended a lot of things that bad coaching, you know, maybe created. And so he was good enough. He was scheme-proof. He was all these things. And I just don't think that's been the case. He's not been able to overcome an offensive line. They're on pace to, if this continues at this rate, there will only be two other quarterbacks who have been sacked as much as Caleb Williams this season. Randall Cunningham in 1986 and David Carr in 2002.
That's absurd. That's absurd.
It's absurd, and it's also
it's just wrong. But I guess that's part of what I'm asking. You know, I had this long conversation with Phil Simms at the Super Bowl one year. This is bizarre, but I was sitting there, and Phil had done a hit with me, and then he was just killing time, and we got off the air, and I was kind of like, "What's going?" I just started chatting with him. And he was asking me what I thought was the worst. I was asking him questions about being a quarterback, and he was telling me Parcells' philosophy and different things. And he asked me, what's the worst thing a quarterback can do? And I'm like, throw picks. You know, obviously, you know, lose the handle of the football. You know, if you fumble, if you give the ball away. He's like, you're looking at everything wrong. He's like, where are you from? I'm from Chicago. Oh, yeah, well, you guys don't know much about quarterbacks. You haven't seen a lot of quarterbacks. His whole thing was, Parcells would say to him every once in a while, "Hey, only two picks today, no more than two." And it occurred to me when I watched Detroit win a game where the quarterback threw five picks, that the one thing I thought Caleb Williams was doing well was protecting the ball. But maybe they're trying to coach game manager into the guy. Maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way. Maybe I ought to think, boy, you know, Peyton Manning threw a ton of picks in his rookie season. You know why? Because he was learning the speed of the game. He was learning the game. He was taking chances. Is Caleb Williams now become a tentative player because the offensive line is beaten to hell and he's getting beaten up? But also, why wouldn't you want to get rid of the ball quicker? Why are you willing to take a sack? Because probably they've preached to him not to throw picks.
Maybe so. That could be one way to look at it. I don't know that it's fully then in that context that he has no time to throw, and I don't know that he's
in a position. And they can't run.
I don't know that he's in a position to throw the ball down the field in a way that, you know, when you do that, you need a protected pocket. You need to have a 5 to 7 step drop,
or you need to be on,
or you need to be on the move and be able to throw the ball down the field. Now I think he can do that well, and we've seen him, you know, thrive in those situations, almost like when he improvises, he's better. A lot of quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, are like that. I think he's got a lot going on in his head right now, but it's very difficult to process it and sort it out when he's under siege. And he's been under siege every time he drops back. We can parse the sack by sack if you want. Tim Hasselbeck, 6 of them were Caleb, and other people say 2 or 3. And he was sacked 9 times, and he was under pressure a lot. And he's been under pressure as much as any rookie quarterback has been this season. So Jaden Daniels, we could have that discussion, and people have wondered that question aloud. But I don't know that if with this coaching approach and the offensive line personnel, I'm not sure that any of the rookies that are having better years than Caleb Williams would be able to have success in this offense.
No, I that is the point. You know, you're wondering, well, we'll let you know by Wednesday, you know, pay you for a hamburger next Tuesday. What you're wondering when they're going to get to changing the play caller, and it feels like they have to change the
play caller. It does feel like they have to, and I do think they will.
Yes.
My sense is that.
It doesn't mean they have to fire the offensive coordinator, but they have to change the play caller.
That's up to human resources and agents and severance pay and however they want to structure the exit strategy for Shane Waldron. The bottom line is that Shane Waldron cannot call the plays against the Packers.
No.
I don't think he will. I don't think that they're positioning this and spent all day yesterday talking about ways that Shane Waldron is going to call plays against Green Bay Sunday at Soldier Field. They're game planning. They're looking ahead. I really would question whether or not that's part of the plan. I don't know what the delay is, the reason for that. I think we have a couple different options. Just clumsy PR is one of them, which is, you know, a safe assumption. You know, this idea, and you hesitate to go too far with this, but like we were talking to Brad Biggs yesterday. We'll talk to him at 7 o'clock today. He throws out the name John Gruden. And I know he was just having some fun with that. But the idea of the Bears talking to somebody outside the organization for guidance, direction, and wondering about a role, you wonder if that is delaying the process. Maybe they wanted to talk to one or two guys. Maybe they wanted to see somebody outside of Hallis Hall, what they would do, how they would handle it, and when they're available.
I mean, and that's fair. You know what went through my head as a reason? Just because Matt Eberflus is Matt Eberflus, that he found some sort of competitive advantage from not telling Green Bay who's calling plays.
Well, I think that's a football coach being a football coach.
But, I mean, the idea is he doesn't want him going back to work on what Carolina did last year.
Right.
Whatever it
might be.
If it's
Thomas Brown.
Yes.
Yeah, the tendencies.
He's going to slow them down so they can't get to all
that. I think this probably was part of the conversation. Yeah. I think that's the blind spot for Matt Eberflus, not understanding how to control perception in a way that's damaging his credibility and putting that ahead of everything, because I don't think that there would be... Do you think the Packers are that concerned about Thomas Brown or Shane Waldron calling the plays?
No, I do not.
Yeah.
I think the Packers are looking at the Bears, at the problems on the offensive line, and at different ways to pressure a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's it, because you look at the opportunities that exist before a rookie quarterback against a team that is priding itself in takeaways. Have to look at the rankings after the bye week where the Packers are. They create takeaways. They're the Bears defense of 2023. They're doing what they need to do to create momentum, take the football away, and they look at, even though Caleb Williams has protected the football, this is a good spot for the Packer defense, regardless of who's calling the plays.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. No, the Bears are they're a damaged and flawed team, and we've seen that. And we just saw one of the worst teams in football come into Chicago, not just beat them, but humiliate them. You know, knock that kid down. Hey, help him up and pat him on the head. What is that? How do you you know, Dustin went on a tirade about that. I got to tell you, every time I see that, it does make my blood boil a little bit.
Well, the team that came in here described as soft by their head coach made you leave looking like the soft team on the field.
Humiliated.
Yeah. It was a bad look. Sunday was a bad overall look. The last 3 weeks have been really a terrible change in direction for this franchise, and the last month has been misery. So in that vein, you're looking at Packers week. So now you've got some decisions to make. I don't think we'll hear anything today officially from the Bears, because they're not scheduled to do anything. Maybe we'll hear some things announced off the beat, or maybe some people from the national media will break something. That's the way it's going to happen.
That's the kind of thing. That's kind of how it will happen.
Did you bristle at Gruden? What did you think when Biggsy brought something like that up?
Oh, I laughed.
I did too.
I thought it was funny.
But it did open up an idea.
My response was, does Roger Goodell know?
Yeah. Well, I don't think it will be John Gruden, but somebody like that.
But you know, I can't. And again, was it Phil Snow? I apologize.
Yeah, Phil Snow last year. So, he was a shadow defensive coordinator, the guy who planned ahead.
Don't you need a guy like that?
Frank Reich.
Okay, that's perfect.
I'm just saying, Frank Reich would be a guy that comes to mind when you're looking for veteran guys who are offensive-minded, who have relationships with Matt Eberflus. He worked for Reich. I wondered last night, talking to some people, if that was one of the guys in the mix and part of the conversation. How do we fix this? What would you do? I don't know. Look, admittedly, that is as unsourced as probably the John Gruden idea was with Brad. But I do think that you wonder, when they're taking this much time, if that's a direction, whatever, something they would consider. You could use some help. You could use a lot of help.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm all for it. But I just like the way you described your Frank Reich and his John Gruden are equally unsourced. It's pure speculation.
Well, unsourced, you know, things come up in conversation with people around the league, and
there are names.
Where did that come from? Well, a friend of a friend said this, and you're like, well, do you talk about it? What is it? It's an idea, though. It's something that could it be much worse than it is right now?
Does Phil Snow know everything? Know anything about?
I'm convinced.
Offense?
You know, I'm convinced he never existed.
Phil Snow.
You know, I'm convinced he was just somebody. I couldn't find him online. I could never get him. He never returned my phone calls. Couldn't even tweet at him. Who is this Phil Snow that he spoke of that changed last year's defense for the Bears?
Some soccer player from Indiana University.
Yeah, I think he was. So the other big story yesterday, I think, Molly, beyond the coaching crisis and what the Bears are doing with their staff and play calling, I feel like Jalen Johnson on the afternoon show really – again, for the third week in a row, kind of let us peek behind the curtain here. And it was Jalen Johnson talking about some things that really saying the quiet part out loud.
Are there people on this team that you know, some people work harder than others? It's just human nature, right?
Yeah, so, it's not really even a question.
Yeah, It's just what happens. So how can you change that? What do you do to possibly change that if you can do anything as a player in that regard?
Honestly, I've been fighting myself with this question for a long time. Because I've thought about it, I've been asked the question, and I think honestly for me, part of me says that there's nothing you can do, and a part of me says that there's something that you can do, because I'm gonna use your office, for example. I'm gonna use you and Lauren. So if you're used to getting extra or staying after your designated hours and you go over and you see how you can do something better and you work at it, and you start getting results. And then Lauren sees you and he still just kind of lollygags, laughs, hey, all right, I'm gonna see you later, and then he leaves. And it's like you do that for a long time and you see somebody see you getting work, and it's like at some point you kinda hey, whatever, you wanna work out, yeah, and then some guys will leave or he'll ask you, hey, what is it that you do? And you'll tell him, and then he doesn't do it. So it's like at a certain point, it's like you kind of think in your head, like, maybe he just don't give a damn how I give a damn. And it's like at the end of the day, that's okay. But how can you can't necessarily change somebody's want to or hunger to do something, to be uncomfortable. I mean, there's times where he can be, oh, well, I got to pick my daughter from school. It's like, yeah, you got to pick a daughter from school. But sometimes, man, you got to ask somebody else to pick your daughter from school so you can get this dang work. So our radio show can be the best that it can be. But I feel like it's oftentimes there's always a rhyme or reason or something better to do. And those opportunities are being taken. And then it's, oh, well, we all want to win. No, we all don't want to win at the same level. Like, we all don't want to grow this radio show at the same level, because clearly there's not a level of application that has been going on. So, I mean, it's, you can tell somebody to do it. I mean, like they say, you take the horse to the well, but you can't make him drink. At the end of the day, we got to have a lot of guys that are thirsty. And I feel like there's definitely an area of improvement for everybody, players, coaches. I mean, everybody involved is a level of hunger and thirst to be able to truly get the job done.
Now, that is a great answer to a good question. And I think there's a lot there. There's a lot of meat on that bone. I think you learn from that Jalen Johnson wants to be great and is working very hard to be great. And you see his improvement and how he has gotten better in the NFL. And that is a way a lot of players have gone about it. It also, there's a difference between people, and there are different people in all walks of life and all professions. And I think that's a very honest answer, and I think there's a lot of truth to it. And the guys, you know, he's on a team with Nate Davis, so he knows there are guys that don't care.
It's beyond Nate Davis, though. Nate Davis is an easy symbol to pick on,
yes.
But this is so much deeper and bigger than Nate Davis, a guy who hasn't been on the field when it matters in a very long time. Jalen Johnson, we already knew that he's committed to being great because he made himself into a great cornerback who now has the contract to prove it and the credentials to underscore it. What he said yesterday, what we just heard, was if you are looking for reasons to question this coaching staff beyond the
exactly
play calling,
right,
you just found him. This is a leader of this football team. I don't know if he's designated as a captain or not. It doesn't matter. This is somebody who does his job as well as, if not better than, everybody at any position on that football team, calling out and implicating everybody on the roster, leaving nobody beyond doubt. And when he says it the way he says it, he doesn't name names, which I don't know if that was better or worse, because now you have this idea of an entire locker room that isn't trying as hard as it needs to try. Why? They're professional athletes. When you're at this level, you have to do it for your own pride in your contract, but your coaches have to get the best out of you. And that's not happening. If you were looking for a reason to question this coaching staff beyond what we've already seen, just listen to that again. He gave you every reason to question Matt Eberflus and his staff.
Like, didn't you see that in the Hard Knocks thing, where there's a moment in that where he goes to Roma Dunze, ask him how his leg's holding up, because he wants to work on a certain route, and he has Rome stay and run these routes so he can get his time in, his work in, right?
Nobody's worried about Jalen Johnson, though.
But
right,
that's why they're not worried about
him.
And that's how you have to be. You know it. You've been around the NFL. You know when players are fully committed, and that's quite frankly, that's like Hall of Fame stuff when you are working that hard on your profession, and you're doing it all the time. And
But if you don't care about it,
you're not going
to
work at
it. Well, that's the thing. And if he's giving voice to this, then he is obviously bothered by other teammates not living up to his standard. And he's got a high standard. And he's we saw that on Hard Knocks. You see it on the field every Sunday. And what you need is everyone to meet that. And the standard is the standard, as Mike Tomlin says. The Bears maybe... Yeah. Do have somebody now who we have heard is setting the bar pretty high, and not everybody is able to meet that standard, and that's indicting, and it's a problem. And so,
yes, it is.
3 weeks in a row, we have heard now somebody from the locker room publicly identify a problem. This week, it's effort or commitment. Both cases, it's bad. And it shouldn't surprise anybody that the Bears have lost some games they shouldn't, because they don't have a locker room that's cohesive, and they certainly don't have the effort level that's required.
But I think the other element of it is they don't have the people that know what's missing. They don't have, you know, what improvement and development is understanding, hey, you're here, but you have to be here. You can't just do this and this. You're going to stay. I'll stay with you, but we have to keep working on this and that and the other. There's no, you know, it doesn't happen by accident.
That's what you're right, though. But neither did this. Neither this regime was not put together accidentally. It was intentionally assembled with guys who don't have experience doing the jobs that they're asked to do. And I'm talking about the general manager, the head coach, the offensive coordinator. He has called plays before, but I just feel like when you have guys who are on their first go-around, you end up having situations like this. The Bears have never valued experience to the level that they need to value experience, and I think what you see is this as the result. This should not be a season that is off the rails midway through it. This is not the way things were designed, and they have talent and personnel that should be preventing this from happening. They're better than this. They really are. So when you hear things like that from Jalen Johnson, yeah, you're nodding your head, and you're like, yeah, I see that. You also should be as angry as you were on Sunday, because that's as indicting as anything. The easiest thing for any athlete to provide is effort and commitment. That's not hard.
Well, it's a bare minimum.
That's the bare minimum. Yeah. But it doesn't sound like they're getting that. The bare minimum is what they're getting.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it is an incredibly indicting comment, and it's about things that you don't normally think about. And I'll say this, like, I know they have a coach up there in John Hoke, who is a hell of a coach, who you look at the amount of the number of injuries and issues that have happened on his watch, and you know what? They played pretty well, and they've gotten through a lot of that. And it's because you understand how to get people ready to perform in an NFL football game, even if they're not designed to be the starter in that game.
John Hoke has been great for Jalen Johnson's career as well.
I agree.
You know, and you look at that secondary, and that is the area where if they have to take a step back because of personnel who's missing or injured, you haven't seen the decline in the way that you have seen in other position groups.
So you know, as much as you accept the idea that there is a hierarchy to every group, every position, there is a starter and there is someone there, you have to be able to develop people to be usable in combination with each other, especially on an offensive line. No one, I mean, we all understand what's happened. Everybody knows the injuries. Everyone can see it. Everybody knows what the plan was and what this has become. But that doesn't mean that you excuse 9 sacks in a game.
Or accept it. You cannot have an acceptance level that you sense is happening at Hallis Hall.
That's right.
A day of silence yesterday, of inaction. You wonder how long it will go. And meanwhile, around the league, they are the national punchline. Everybody's making fun of the Bears. Everybody's weighing in on the Bears.
They've been for weeks.
Yeah, this week seems like it's worse and louder, maybe because it's Packer week, maybe because it's midseason, not sure why. but everyone's got a thought about the Bears.
Well, I think you're absolutely on it. It's because their schedule is just going to be the toughest in the league now. And here's how they wound up. They're below 500. Wait till you see what happens now. All right. We've got a lot to get to. We got the pick six next. I almost said big win for the Bulls. They were in that game for a long time.
They played well. They really did.
Better than I thought they would.
They did.
But I don't want to congratulate anyone for a loss. We had enough of that already in this town. All right. We got the pick six. We're going to pick it all apart. All the big stories of the day. Mully and Hall on the score.
Phil Snow.
Chicago.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Odyssey Sports Station. The Score! Scoreboard update.
Score update studio brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants. Do it today. Zach LaVine led the Bulls with 26 points. Not enough to beat the Cavs. They stay perfect at 12-0. The final from the United Center. Cavs 119, Bulls 113. Donovan Mitchell, 36 points for the Cavs. Bulls, Knicks, Wednesday, 6:15 pregame right here on the Score. Week 10 of the NFL is in the books. Dolphins get the best of the Rams out in LA, 23-15. Today's an off day for the Bears, but lots of decisions being made up there. More on that during the Mully and Haw shows, the pick six in just a moment. The Bears-Packers noon kick on Fox. Packers opening up as a 6-point favorite per our friends over at Circus Sports Illinois. And congratulations to former Blackhawk Jeremy Roenick on his induction into the Hockey Hall of Fame. This hour of the show is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Were you bemused? Were you confused by Matt Eberflus at his Monday media meeting? Why did he talk about change and adjustment but declined to reveal what those might be? Do you believe he was caught mid-process? Had he not told everybody their new role? Was it some weird competitive advantage for the folks behind the cheddar curtain? How indecisive did he appear?
Boy. Yeah, I think that's good. I found the whole thing puzzling. He appeared so indecisive, and it's really not that hard. It's just you make a decision and you move on. Maybe you're right. Maybe they needed to talk to Gruden. I don't know what it could be, but they did not have, it wasn't a satisfying event. It was just kind of, you just felt more of the same. You just felt like the muddle continues, that it's just sort of confounding. And I get it. It's not easy. It's difficult. You got to make sure everyone knows. But what do you do? Are you running around trying to get everyone on board? Or are you just telling people, here's what I'm doing? Or are you commiserating? And how many people need you talk to? Talk to what? Figure out what you want to do. Run it by your boss and then go to work. It doesn't seem that complicated, but for whatever reason, these things always end up being a lot more complex in places where you feel they're struggling than in places where you feel like they got a handle on things. And you're operating, I suppose, from a negative to begin with. So maybe it appears that way from the outside. But I once again did not come away with the feeling that all is good here. Wow, they really got a handle on this. You came away with sort of a shrug and a just kind of throwing your hands up a little bit. Like, does anyone care how this looks? Because the whole laughingstock thing that you brought up earlier, David, you just don't want to appear to be stumbling and bumbling, right? And that's how they look quite often.
Maybe it's professional courtesy. It's obviously, at least to me, a Trace Armstrong thing. They don't want to. They're all under the agent of Trace Armstrong. Poles, Eberflus, and Waldron. I think that's a large part why it wasn't enough. But by him not, by him, I think it was Biggs who asked the question and part of the follow-up. There was five or six questions in a row. I played the chunk during the pregame show. Will Shane Waldron still be on the staff? He could have said yes. He didn't. And to me, that was very telling. Mm-hmm. And that also means, again, if I'm understanding the word I think he knows what he's doing. He just doesn't have to tell us. And he doesn't like this group of media people. He doesn't. He doesn't have to. No, I would not. I think overall, especially last year, he was completely disrespected by media people that assumed they were no longer going to have to work with him. Because at the end of the day, there is a partnership up there. Okay, there is a give and take.
Fair enough, but it's not his job to like the media corps.
No, but I'm saying if he liked the media corps, if he thought there was a better working relationship, perhaps yesterday he would have told them. But
we should get back to that.
There's going to be change. Here's what we know. There's going to be change. It would be the upset of the century if Shane Waldron is calling plays at Soldier Field on Sunday against the Pats. That's changing. And the question is, who's calling it, and is Shane still around? Those are the two questions still to be answered.
Yeah, they know what's going on, and they were game planning on Monday with everyone doing, maybe performing their new roles. I just don't think they wanted to share it. They weren't in a position to share it. Maybe they're still talking to other people, whether it's John Gruden or Frank Reich or somebody else outside the organization for a little direction. Mostly it was disappointing. All the other things apply, embarrassing. You can pile on if you wish, but it was disappointing because it was an opportunity for a head coach to assert some leadership and to be decisive and to be strong and really just be simple. Yes or no, pick a lane, go down it, and don't look back. I think people would respect that, even if it was the wrong decision. Sometimes the way that you announce it or the way that you execute it, you gain respect, and the Bears are lacking respect right now. This is what I can't figure out about Matt Eberflus, who I do, as you know, like personally, but professionally so easy to question. He was a very good Mid-American Conference linebacker. He had hundreds of tackles in college. He only did that because he had football instinct, and he just reacted, right? Football players just react. They read and they react. As a play caller, he's very good. We've called him elite.
Yes.
As a play caller. You know why? Instinctively, he just reacts. What do you want on 3rd and 5? Okay, this is what, this formation, boom, go, call. This is what he does. He reacts, and that has always served him well. As a head coach, he's just like reading his keys, watching what's going to happen. He's not reacting. He's reading. It's like it's off a script, and it's very clumsy, and it's very ineffective. And yesterday was clumsy and ineffective. Mostly it was disappointing. You can do better, Matt Eberflus. Just be yourself. Just react.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Voice of Brad Biggs. We'll see what he thinks at 7. It's Biggs time with Mully and Haw. Do you believe Eberflus when he says the decision on Shane Waldron is, quote, mine alone, end quote? Why does he have to talk it through with everyone in the building and meet with GM Poles if he has the final voice? Is he searching for a consensus?
I'm not sure he's searching for a consensus. I think that he is probably limited in his capacity to act like that. I think he's limited in that capacity because you've got a lot of cooks in the kitchen right now. And you've got a complicating factor that the agent representing your offensive coordinator that you're trying to fire is also your representative. And oh, by the way, your boss's representative. So it does muddy the waters quite a bit. And I do think that it's a complicated thing and situation at Hallis Hall where they don't do well with complicated situations. So I don't think it's just his decision alone. That's the way they want to present it, but nobody's buying it. I would like to hear from Ryan Poles. I would like to know why we haven't to this point. This is the 3-game losing streak. That qualifies as a crisis in the NFL, whether you want to acknowledge it or not. Look around the league. Cover your ears because they're making fun of you. And when you see that, when you hear that, I think you need to respond to it. If you are the overseer of this great organization with such a proud tradition, you know, when you're being mocked, fight back. What do you fight back with? I don't know. But if you're Ryan Poles, I would want to be heard right now. I would want to make it clear that maybe it is Matt Eberflus's decision. You support your head coach or you don't. I think right now the silence is deafening. I don't hear a lot of support coming from that office. And as the longer this goes on, the more you wonder or the more you know.
And didn't they say there's going to be a lot of noise after this loss? I think they said that yet on Sunday afternoon. Well, they're not helping put an end to the noise by doing what they've done since they addressed the media the first time after the loss on Sunday. Their lack of transparency creates more stuff for us to pick apart, more things for the fans to be upset about. And it should not be his alone. Well, you guys tell me. I mean, in all seriousness, you guys have been around this way longer and in a better position to ask these questions and gain knowledge than I have. Is it typical that head coaches in the NFL, especially of Matt Eberflus's status, would have sole control over their staff and that the GM would just say, okay, you report to me, everybody else reports to you? Is it that simple?
Yeah, I think most NFL head coaches control their staff and decide on the hiring and firing of the coaches under them.
They do.
They do.
But it's now, within consultation with the boss.
I was just going to say, but you are in partnership with someone.
Yeah.
And you are sharing decision-making. And when you are told, guys, I mean, a week today, I think our first question, are you surprised that Matt Eberflus stuck with Shane Waldron as his play caller? That was after the Arizona game, and it got worse. Okay, so this is not a breaking story for the Chicago Bears. They've lost three games in a row. They've gone through a process where they've had the coach confronted by players that were upset about what he was doing. This has gone on. This what we're talking about now has bled over week after week after week, even when they were winning. And they got through it, and that's how they started to put some games together. That and the fact that they played the worst teams in the league. But this is not breaking news. This is, you know, if you weren't thinking about this before the game last Sunday, then guess what? Then you didn't do your due process, your due diligence. You didn't go through what you got to be aware of. Hey, okay, what would happen if something went wrong here? Well, you know, I'm just saying that is the job of the people in charge to monitor this. And we are at a tipping point if we haven't already tipped over. So, I mean, this is the reason it's frustrating is because they've reached a point where you know what's going on and something is going to happen. It's just they can't announce it yet for whatever reason. But yeah, there's going to be an announcement. There's going to be news whether it leaks out today or we find out tomorrow.
That's a good question.
That's the voice of Coach Dave Wants. It'll be in studio for two segments beginning at 7:40. Mike Sando of The Athletic wondered in his piece about the Bears whether a head coach with a strong personality would be considered by the Bears. Is there a head coaching search because team president Kevin Warren would prefer a first-time head coach who's easier to manage? Is there any credence to that?
I love Mike. He does a great job. I think it's fair to wonder and wonder aloud, but I would also say that if Kevin Warren is worried that a strong personality would, whatever this implication is, damage his control or keep him from getting the kind of accolades that are going to come his way if they start winning. Hey, you want to run an organization correctly, you get the best leader you can find and you let that guy do his job. You hire people to do the job that you hire them to do. And you don't care. You take your ego out of it and you do what's best for the team. You get the best personality, the best coach. Now, David's going to disagree with me. Hire the best guy. I'm
not disagreeing with you, Molly. I'm wondering if he's capable of doing that.
Well, now then.
That's the question, isn't it?
Now, you know what we're asking. Is this guy a coward or does he need a level of control that can only be managed by having power over someone? That's what you're asking. I'm not gonna damn Kevin Warren and say he has to have a coach who doesn't know what he's doing quite yet so he can be avuncular. Because I think if that's the case, then they hired the wrong guy as president.
Well, I think this is really fascinating because the other part of this, and maybe it's not in the question, and again, we have limited space. I did not read the article, so you guys can tell me. The big omission in this, you brought him his name, Ryan Poles. Where's his name? Because guess who didn't hire Ryan Poles? Kevin Warren. Does Ryan Poles report to Kevin Warren or does Ryan Poles report to George McCaskey? Because if I'm right and the Bears don't win another game this year, and Kevin Warren's out there looking for public money for a new stadium for the Bears, how's all that going to work? It might not matter if the Bears were in the playoffs, but it'd make it a whole lot easier to ask for public money if the team's doing well. When the team's in the toilet, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, okay?
And struggled with it. And have
won Super Bowls. They're the best team in the league, the best organization, because they have the best player, and they can't get money for a stadium. So I don't know that it's connected. I think those are different asks.
Okay. I'm just saying, my point is, at some point, Kevin Warren has to get involved, like you're saying, and at some point, does he say, I am cleaning
house.
That
seems implausible. Don't you think the way that he considers himself a mentor to Ryan Poles, he's not going to fire his pupil?
Well, he's
going to
say that public, but David, did he hire him? Did I miss that? Who hired him?
Kevin
Warren hasn't gotten to hire anybody yet.
I don't think he's going to be that. He's not going to be the one that gets rid of Ryan Poles. I don't think Kevin Warren would be doing that. Look, I understand everything you're saying, Mully, and I think that that's the fair way to look at it. But I think what this story reflects is the understanding or the perception that Kevin Warren's ego is too large to bring in somebody who is a strong leader as a head coach. And it also suggests that there's the expectation that if there is a coaching search, that he's going to be a big part of it because he is the team president. He may not be a football guy, but he considers himself a football guy. He's front and center every time that there's a big moment at Halas Hall with the Bears organization. So I do believe that it would affect the process because what Kevin Warren wants as much as anything, based on his tenure as the team president in Chicago, is that he wants influence and he wants impact. And you can't tell me that if they're going to hire the next head coach of the Bears, that he's not going to want those two things when all of this happens. He's going to want his fingerprints all over that process. He will say it's Ryan Poles' decision to make. He will say it's Ryan Poles' coach to hire, and he will be the one up there, the puppeteer at Halas Hall, pulling all the strings because I don't think he can help himself, and I think that's the leader that he has become. And that is that a product of his ego, his oversized ego? Maybe. I want to be fair here. But I do think that it's inconceivable to me that they're going to have a coaching search and he's not going to be at the forefront of it.
Honestly, I've been fighting myself with this question for a long time.
That's the voice of Jalen Johnson. At one point Monday, Adam Schefter, Four Letter Network, floated the idea that the Bears were considering benching Caleb for Tyson Bagent, which Matt Eberflus dismissed.
Matt, are you going to make a change in quarterback?
No, Caleb is our starter.
Where did that come from, and was that a realistic consideration?
I sure hope not. That was maybe, with due respect, Patrick Finley asked some very good questions, and I know why he asked it, because it was out there. But are you serious? I would like to be, you know, I'm on the board of directors of the Bagency, but this is not a serious conversation. This cannot be a serious conversation. You can't bench your number one overall draft pick. You cannot bench Caleb Williams unless you take him out of the game to remove him from harm's way, which we know they don't do, okay? They haven't done. No. No. 100 times no.
But what you just said, David, and I have also supported the idea, taking him out of the game, or and I had a really passionate conversation for 90 seconds, we'll say, with Olin Krutz at the remote. You know, if you're going to leave Caleb in because he's obviously a big part of the team, and Mully, I think you're going to support this. You cannot have him with four wide receivers behind that offense. Hand the ball off, understand the situation, be part of the team. We're all in this together. But again, if he, Caleb Williams, can't protect himself, let's say we might hear from some former ex-NFL quarterbacks that six of the nine sacks were on him. So if he personally can't figure out how to protect himself and the offensive line can't protect himself and the play caller from the last couple weeks can't figure out what plays to call to protect him, then maybe it's a good idea that he's not in the game. Because you know what you don't want to do? You don't want there to be an injury at this point that would require surgery, and then all of a sudden he's not available till week 7 or 8 of the 2025 wow. NFL season.
Now he's in surgery.
Yeah, I think just, you know, take a breath. You know, here's what you can't do, all right? There's basically one thing. You cannot draft a guy number one overall, get rid of any competition, get rid of any idea that you have another player that could use some playing time or deserve some kind of... You can't clear the whole path for him, give him the team, and then say, yeah, you know what, we probably should have made you sit and wait for a year.
Right.
You just can't do, that. He's your starting quarterback.
They can't unring that bell.
He's your starting quarterback for now and forever. Amen. He is the man. He remains your starter. You figure out a way to not throw the ball, to not try to force him into peril, to figure out a way to keep him safe. You obviously started making bad decisions about 2 or 3 years ago when you started looking at their offensive line. Regardless, you cannot damage his confidence on top of everything else you're doing to damage his career. For the love of God, you do not bench a quarterback who's number one overall.
I can't believe we're talking about this.
I mean, honestly, then if they do that, let's go to court.
We're gone.
We're
gone.
Filing lawsuits everywhere.
We're talking about fireable offenses.
Oh, my God. Oh,
okay, that should have been the last question. Sorry.
Different question on a different topic.
Look at Dustin's face. Bitter beer face.
I mean, Adam Schefter put it out there.
I know.
It wasn't Dustin Rhodes, morning show producer at The Score, Dustin, Matt Eberflus, floated an idea on the Mully and Haw show.
We're not yelling at you.
I didn't say you were, but the reason it got asked, the reason it got brought up is because the great Adam Schefter suggested
it. I know. Somebody's saying that.
He probably listened to the show. What do you think of the way the Bulls competed against the Cavs, who surprised the NBA by winning their 11 games ahead of their game Monday night? So they are now 12-0, are the Cavs. Are the Bulls in the same league? Well, I guess they're all in the association, right?
I was impressed with the Bulls last night. They competed a lot closer and a lot longer than I thought they would. That first half of that game was exceptional. They went back and forth. There were lead changes and there were ties, and it was like a back and forth tough basketball game, and the Bulls looked like they belonged on the court with the Cavs. And if you watch that game, you felt the Bulls are a better team than maybe their record shows. And I, honest to God, was very impressed with how they played, and they stayed in that game till the end of the game. You know, they didn't fall behind by 20 and need some miraculous comeback. That was a back-and-forth game. You know, the guy that kills them is Donovan Mitchell. He is so good. And he, every time they needed a bucket or anything, I mean, they got a lot of good players, but that guy is a special player. And, you know, you see a guy like that and you wonder, like, how did he wind up there? Like, how did they figure out how to get him and the Bulls couldn't? Because he's a hell of a player. That was good stuff, man. That was a really fun game, and I almost congratulated the Bulls on their competitiveness.
Well, I mean, the difference is the turnovers, the points off of turnovers. You got too many guys. Like, who's supposed to have the ball in their hands to facilitate the offense?
Lunt.
You know, is it Giddey? Is it White? Lunt. You know, those two together had 9 turnovers. You know, sometimes Zach is playing like the power forward point guard role. Mm-hmm. So who is supposed to do that? But again, there was one superstar. There's one superstar. His name's Donovan Mitchell. Okay, every night he doesn't have like a 36-point night and then have a 16-point night like Max LaVine. Okay, It's not what he does. You know, when you have that many guys scoring in double digits, yeah. And Mully, you're right. That was a nip and tuck type of game. Right, you look at the box score, very tight. You know, Bulls won the first quarter by a point, lost the second quarter by 2 points, lost the third by 2 points, lost the fourth by 3 points. You don't maybe 3 or 4 less turnovers. Maybe that game's going overtime and you're getting extra basketball. Who knows?
No doubt about it. 21 turnovers, too many. We're short on time. Donovan Mitchell is a superstar. Kenny Atkinson has that team off to a great start. They're playing at a pace like the Golden State Warriors are shooting threes. 12-0 is incredible. The Bulls gave them all they could handle. That was an encouraging loss, if you can have such a thing in the NBA. I know you want to win all those games, but they did play at a high level for a long time. Too much Darius Garland, too much Donovan Mitchell. Bulls, though, they have to be a little bit encouraged. If they take care of the basketball, they're a pretty competitive team.
Molly, I got a question for you and Hawk.
Jared Payton answering questions at 9 o'clock. How do you feel about NFL commish Roger Goodell announcing the league plans to play 8 international games next season? London, Spain, Brazil, Mexico City, Germany, and maybe Ireland. Do you like the early morning starts, and where would you like to travel to see an NFL football game?
Well, I like the idea of Bears Steelers in Ireland. We could do that. Mm. I'd like the idea of whatever venue they choose, Spain, Brazil, Mexico City, Germany, the official, that is the line judge or the, whoever speaks in to the audience, speaks in that language, like Sean Hockley did, yeah. Speak German in the Munich game.
That was great.
But look, this is just more of growing the sport. I think you like it unless you're maybe a player. Heard that from Olin and Pat the other day. But this is inevitable, so you might as well embrace it.
I have no problem with those 8:30 kickoffs Chicago time. I've never been to Europe. I'd like to go to any game in Europe. And if I had to pick off of this list, Spain is the top of my list. I that's where I want to go. My first trip to Europe, I want Spain to be part of that trip.
Wow. That is insane that you haven't been there. I don't know what's holding you back. You should get that done. I'm all for it. I love this idea. I think that the fans make Germany a fun place to want to go. I really think that London is a phenomenal city. Obviously, Ireland is the homeland, for the love of God. I belong at that game. Let's Scorehouse Ireland. Could Scorehouse Dublin, there could be damage done. So let's be aware of that. It's interesting you say that. I think that Spain would be phenomenal. Barcelona or Madrid, I'd go either place, but it would just be, it would be sensational. It would be the makings of a great weekend for sure. I got to be honest with you. I'm trying to think if there's anywhere on this list that I wouldn't be excited to go. I don't speak Portuguese, but I'm willing to make a fool of myself. Brazil sounds great. Mexico City.
I think Australia. I'd like to see on the list all those punters.
Oh, that'd be great.
And they have a lot of. They have a punter factory. They develop a lot of punters in Aussie.
It's because they play that Aussie rules. We could go to a game at the Aussie. We could go to like the Melbourne Cricket Ground.
You could. It's too long of a flight.
See the guy.
Perth House. We can stay at my aunt and uncle's.
Okay, I don't know if I'm going to Perth.
Yeah, it'd be great in Perth.
Going to Perth to see the Bears lose by 10.
You would do very well in Perth.
They have a good football team there. Their professional football team is actually pretty good.
Do they really? Yeah. What's the nickname?
The Eagles, I believe. They're blue and gold.
Kangaroos?
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. We got the X Point next. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Verstadt Angriff.
Oh.
5 Yards Treffen. It's by the center. It's third down.
Oh, look at Sean Hockley hooked on Fox.
Showing up.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Do you believe Matt Eberflus identified the correct problem with the offense when he said in-game communication.
You know, just, in-game communication, you know, in terms of that, it's got to be better. The adjustments, the tactical adjustments need to be better, with that on all sides, and everything's on the table. And it's important that we look at everything and we take the time to get that done.
So did Matt get it right? In-game communication is one of the bigger or biggest issues.
Well, it's on the list, but I don't think it's at the top of it necessarily. I do think that there's preparation. What are you doing to be ready to combat what the defense shows you? And how are you going to take the game or take the responsibility out of your quarterback's hands or limit his ability or responsibility to change plays and to have so much in his head? And I think you need to simplify that. That's preparation. I think there's innovation. You need to scheme guys open. You need to design plays that make more sense, that maybe are a little bit more predictable. Take the layups, the quick passing game to help your offensive line, to help your quarterback, to reduce the sacks. So there's preparation, innovation, and then there's the execution. You know, you need to make the easy throws. You need to make the blocks in front of you. You can't have misses. You can't have missed assignments. And, oh, by the way, effort. That would be good. Jalen Johnson says so. So before you get to communication, which I think is important, but that speaks to chemistry and that speaks to things that we are talking about a lot and reading body language and this and that. You need preparation, innovation, execution, and then you get to communication. But the Bears, you know, it's a long list of problems, and that's where it starts.
Yeah, in-game communication is a pretty broad sentence, phrase. You know, could they be telling Caleb Williams this week up at Halas Hall, this is the play, run it. We're not changing the play because you're not getting the play out. You're not seeing it right yet. These defensive coordinators are confusing you as a rookie quarterback. The other part, and Mully, I think you mentioned it, if Shane Waldron was kept around, perhaps he goes upstairs to change his view of things. And would that be, if the only thing done on Sunday was that Shane Waldron is moved upstairs, boy, that would be really unsatisfying as a fan. But maybe that's something that is possible.
Yeah, we'll find out. As far as this is concerned, in-game communication, that is a bizarre term to use. I mean, is he saying that? I mean, I understand the adjustments, and how are you not verbalizing the adjustments, or how are you not communicating the adjustments? There's a clip out there on social media where you see Caleb, who's just looks like he's just gotten sacked again, and he's sitting on the bench, and he's next to Shane Waldron, who has got this huge grin on his face and seems to be like in a different mentality than his quarterback. And Caleb, and he's saying something, and Caleb is like shaking his head no. It's awful. So is that what he means by the in-game communication? Is he not working the quarterback in the right way? Is this something on the headset that the coach isn't hearing? Like I don't know exactly what this means, to be honest with you, but I would like a little bit more explanation of how that's gone wrong, of what is in the mind of the coordinator and the call of the play that isn't connecting to whomever he's speaking to on the sideline. It doesn't surprise me to hear that, because I think he's been kind of strange behind the microphone. I've watched a lot of this stuff and not understood quite what he means. He doesn't really explain himself in a way that is necessarily something that I would understand, or a way that I would choose to speak myself, right? It's just difficult sometimes when you feel like you're having a conversation with someone who isn't speaking the same language as you. It's a little bit weird. And I'm not saying the guy doesn't know, you know, what was the Jaguars coach? You know, I'm not saying that he would say something I couldn't understand. I'm not trying to pin him down like that. I just want to know what exactly the type of communication issue is. But okay, in-game communication, whatever it is, maybe someone else calling plays can change the rhythm of the team.
Well, you wonder if it's between coach and player, player and player, because quarterback and receivers, that communication has been lacking.
Yes.
And clearly there's a gap between the play caller and the quarterback, and there's a distance that's represented in that image that you described, which is all over social media, yes, which can be dangerous place to get accurate depictions of what's going on.
But it's hard not to look at that and think like, right, oh, those are two guys.
And people will run with that. Yeah. And so it was an odd description of what the number one problem is. I think the number one problem is, frankly, if you want to really simplify it, is that you can't protect the quarterback.
Yeah.
And your offensive line can't move the line of scrimmage.
You can't move the ball. So, the number one problem, you can't score points.
That's a problem. Back-to-back games without his touchdown for the first time since 2004, and that bears repeating again and again and again, because that was a terrible football team and one that was on its way up that you were trying to build, but that was Lovie Smith's first season, and the quarterbacking was shared between your guy, Chad Hutchinson, Jonathan Quinn, and Craig Krenzel.
He was my guy.
I know.
He was in my camp.
I know he was.
Craig Krenzel, or Krenzler, as he was once miscalled. Also, big camp.
None of them, by the way, were number one overall draft picks, in case you're wondering.
Quite the opposite. All righty. We've got your calls. We're going to get to your calls. I feel bad. We had a guy call from Denmark in the 5:30 hour, and here we are alone.
No, that's rotten.
We lost. Yeah, there was something that was rotten in the state of Denmark. Well played. Mully and Haw on the score.
There's got to be a change and adjustment to what we're doing, because we obviously lost three in a row. There will be changes, adjustments being made. Again, I'm not going to disclose those right now. I'm not at that point in the process. Monday's a long day.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Matt Eberflus. He knows how to really stretch out a day.
Sunday was pretty long, too. Sunday into Monday.
These weeks are dragging, pal.
These weeks are dragging. It's been one heck of a month for the Bears. They have not won since they were in London. When's the last time they won on American soil? It's been a while. It's been a while. And now Sunday, the Packers come to town. This is Packer week. And if you think the Bears went to work on Monday, the staff, the coaches, they reported the house hall without knowing who was doing what against the Packers, I'm not buying it. They know what they're doing. They just haven't announced it yet.
They know what they're doing. I'm not buying it.
Okay, you know what I mean by saying that.
I'm just taking you
literally.
I'm not
like, oh, they know what they're doing. No, they know what their duties are. They are trying to perform them.
Oh, they have performed a lot of duty, my friend.
We'll find out Sunday if they know what they're doing.
Oh, let's get to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. We'll start with Luke. He's on the road. Hey, Luke.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, I got something I was thinking about, too, with the health of the team. What are they really doing to prepare for the most physical game in sports? Like, you guys are looking at their strength and conditioning, particularly in the O-line. Are they preparing them right? Is it more – I mean, you obviously have got some injuries you can't get past, but is that something they got to look at too? Because that seems like it's a common theme the last few years, particularly in the O-line. Or is it just a depth problem?
It's all a problem. To quote John Fox, I think they have a depth problem. I'm not quite sure what specifically the question is about the offensive line, but this is the reality of the offensive line. The one we saw Sunday at Soldier Field against the Patriots was one full of backups. They didn't look when healthy. The Bears' offensive line is still suspect and worth questioning. When unhealthy and damaged, full of backups, it's even more compromised and easy to criticize. Both starting tackles missing, both starting guards missing. Tevin Jenkins starts, but he can't finish. And Coleman Shelton, I think he was brought here to be a backup.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's been starting all season long.
Yeah,
you've got a starting five that really is your depth that Ryan Poles was bragging about in the preseason.
Man, boy, some things you just need to bite your tongue about. Bobby is in Naperville. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Listen, you know, the only right answer, and you're not going to like it, is to bench Caleb Williams and start Tyson Bagent. And let me tell you what the real problem is, right? The problem is what happens when he drives the ball down the field and puts it in the end zone. Then how is everybody going to blame anybody but Caleb Williams then, right? Mully, you scream and yell about not benching Caleb Williams. Well, that's because after a combined, between you two, you have both played high-level sports and you have 70 years, I think, of sports reporting, a distinguished career, and you've decided to both stake your entire reputations on Caleb Williams. You guys say that the Bears brought up all this stuff about Caleb Williams being this. No, it wasn't them. It was you. You guys drove the Justin Fields hate bus all for 8 months. I don't know why. If it wasn't Weederer saying something and then you backing it up, or you saying something and Biggs backing it up, it was ridiculous. And so now here we are. It's quite obvious Caleb Williams is not even good enough to be a starting quarterback. He's going to get himself hurt. And now you want to yell and scream that you can't do this, you can't do that. It's the only answer. It's not my fault you guys staked your reputation on a bust.
Thanks, Bobby. Appreciate the phone call.
All right, Bobby.
We'll take the hate bus. We've got to talk to Biggs.
Yeah, well, Biggs time next. We'll find out if he still hates Justin Fields. Mully and Haw on the score.
Yeah, whatever.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.